Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Convincing story that maps onto reality, and that's why the central narrative is falling apart.
Right now in the United States, people should not be walking around with masks.
We must see the central narrative for the fiction that it is. We are Americans.
While elections are sometimes messy, this was a secure election.
The founders began the fight for human liberty and self-governance, and it's up to us to finish the job.
I tell you what, we are in a truth emergency right now.
This is the end game.
It's Wednesday, April 17th, 2024, the 1183rd day of dystopia. I'm your moderator, Chris Paul. Let's be reasonable. A warm welcome and hello to all of you listening to the podcast on the day of its release. The only way to do that is by becoming a paid subscriber at imyourmoderator.substack.com. You can do so for as little as $50 a year or $5 a month, and in doing so, you will be supporting me, the work I do, and this show as it expands. And if you can't or you simply don't want to, continue listening to the podcast for free a couple days later on a wide variety of podcast platforms, and of course, Rumble. All I ask is that you share it with your friends. You can find the links to the podcast, the writing, the social media, and the merch site by visiting linktree.com/I'mYourModerator. So I want to pick up on some of what we were discussing yesterday, but before we get into that, I just want to note Donald Trump's public appearance at a bodega in New York City yesterday, following his appearance in the Manhattan courtroom so that they can continue on with jury selection for his fake trial based on a novel legal theory concerning alleged hush money payments to the porn actress Stormy Daniels, allegedly to keep her quiet about an affair between Stormy Daniels and Donald Trump that both Donald Trump and Stormy Daniels deny ever happening. We are told that those payments were made so that Trump could avoid the embarrassment of the claims to protect him in his 2016 campaign, or to simply save his family from the embarrassment. But because they are alleged to have been made in service of him protecting his reputation in the campaign, they are being considered a potential campaign finance violation, even though the Department of Justice has already said that's not the case. The federal authorities tasked with the responsibility of charging those sorts of things have already declined to charge them. And it was alleged that there is some bookkeeping malfeasance on the part of Trump and the Trump Organization. And while that potential misdemeanor is past its statute of limitations, The theory is that if you smash these two non-crimes together, then it becomes a federal crime worthy of prosecuting a quote-unquote former president and attempting to send him to jail. So Donald Trump has been making statements outside the courthouse. He is not appearing today. He has also been updating everyone on Truth Social consistently. Yesterday, after he left the courthouse, he headed on down to this bodega in Harlem. This store was made famous because it was the location of an incident a couple years ago where a store clerk named Jose Alba had stabbed an ex-con to death. This is how the New York Post describes it. The convenience store made headlines in July 2022 when ex-con Austin Simon, 35, was caught on camera cornering 61-year-old clerk Alba in a dispute over chips. Alba was stabbed by Simon's girlfriend, Tina Lee, in the melee and fatally knifed Simon. He was charged with second-degree murder and spent close to a week behind bars until prosecutors in Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg's office agreed to lower his $250,000 bail. The DA's office eventually moved to drop the charges, concluding there wasn't enough evidence to prove that Alba, quote, was not justified in his use of deadly physical force. So Trump headed down to visit this bodega and make a statement about New York's crime problems, crimes that are being neglected by District Attorney Alvin Bragg and New York Attorney General Letitia James, both of whom are leading fake cases against Donald Trump. Letitia James, of course, is responsible for the civil fraud case overseen by Judge Engoron, where they have decided that Donald Trump owes them $600 million for overestimating the value of his real estate properties in a document that says these are only estimates and you should not assume that these are the actual values. You need to go ahead and do that work for yourself. It came with a disclaimer clause. Trump is in the process of appealing that. He had to pay $175 million just to access his rights to do that. And then, of course, we have Alvin Bragg bringing this totally contrived case. But the stop off at the bodega was absolutely brilliant optically. It highlighted a problem that people in the country are familiar with. Trump arrived to hundreds of screaming supporters of all ages, all ethnicities, all social classes, both genders, just an impromptu Trump rally with people chanting "We love Trump" and spontaneously singing the national anthem. And in what must have been the most fortunate coincidence of all time, Joe Biden was doing a little speech of his own at the same time. So Fox News, and I'm not sure about the other news networks, switched from one to the other, showing Trump with hundreds of screaming fans, normal Americans of all types. They shift from there to Joe Biden in a small room telling incoherent stories like this one while Donald Trump was addressing crime, the two-tiered system of justice, political prosecutions and persecutions, and what he plans to do to improve the lives of normal Americans. Let's listen to Joe Biden.
One day I showed up at an off-year convention and I was in the motel, after the local motel, getting changed after the afternoon session, go back to the evening session. I'd come down with some young activists, a little older than me, but still young activists, who were involved in trying to reform the party. And I was in one of those 8x10 bathrooms, you know, they have, shower, toilet, and a sink, and I got a towel on me and shaving cream, and I hear bam, bam, bam at my door really loudly. And I wondered, what the hell is that? I thought it was this guy, Bob Cunningham, on a radio show, and a couple other guys. So I said, okay, guys. And I walked to the door and opened it up, and standing there was the former governor of the state of Delaware, Elbert N. Carville, a big guy, about 6'5", talked at you like this. And the state representative who got defeated 4 years earlier as a Democratic state rep who was retired. And one of the, from the family that had more senators appointed than any other family in American history to the tunnels and the former retired justice and the state chairman. And they said, I'm standing a towel of shaving cream in my face.
There he is, ladies and gentlemen, the most popular president in American history, Joe Biden, 81 million real, lawful American votes. There I was, standing with shaving cream on my face and a towel around my waist, and I was greeting either Bob Cunningham or a governor who built the tunnels. And then, no joke, Joe Biden went on a walk hand in hand with children, just a group of children surrounding Joe Biden, just walking around. What kind of parent is allowing Joe Biden to touch their children? That, my friends, is the product of being deeply embedded in the party of false decorum. These parents will pretend for the sake of their own reputational enhancement that Joe Biden is a good and decent man, and that the accusations against him are a matter of conspiracy theory, despite the fact that they can watch Joe Biden on video sniff and grope and fondle little children and creep them the hell out. And that's before we get to Ashley Biden's diary that describes how Joe Biden would take showers with her that were probably inappropriate. But these parents don't care. They assume it'll be fine. Even if Joe Biden is a pervert, he's not going to do anything perverted to my child. And just think of how much more important I will seem to Barbara down the street when she understands that I let Joe Biden touch my child. And when you're in that position, deeply embedded in the party of false decorum, what are you going to do? Turn down Joe Biden's request to touch your child? Well, that would mean that you believe what all the conspiracy theorists are saying about Joe Biden, and you're definitely not allowed to ever admit that they might be right. So therefore, exposing one's child to this corrupt, demented pedophile is what must be done. That's what we had last night, side by side. Donald Trump has the eyes of the nation on him this week, and he will for the foreseeable future. These fake trials are putting Donald Trump on the television around the clock. Trump is receiving more unobstructed TV coverage than he has at any point since the COVID press conferences of 2020. And while there are some people who, for whatever reason, are still very upset with how Donald Trump handled the very deadly pandemic and everything that followed, the truth is that those press conferences, Donald Trump being out there every day talking to the American people, that probably woke up 25% of this country or more. Even just speaking for myself, I knew that things were seriously wrong prior to that, but I did not realize the depths to which the media would lie about Donald Trump until I got to see him out there every day and compare him to Gavin Newsom and Andrew Cuomo, who were giving their press conferences every day. Only one of those men was actually out there telling the truth to the American people. When Trump is out there on his own, and not being filtered through the lens of the mainstream media, who always presents everything in a way designed to protect their own interests at the expense of Donald Trump and his supporters and the American people, that's when he's able to connect with Americans and break down the anti-Trump central narrative. Now, these things, of course, are set up to look like they are totally spontaneous, and obviously they are not, but that doesn't matter. The fact that Donald Trump can go to a New York bodega and attract hundreds of people while being extremely indicted says everything anyone needs to know about the massive gap between the reality as it exists in the world and the false reality about Donald Trump and his popularity presented by our mainstream media. So consider the optics. We have Donald Trump, active, popular, beloved, in full command of his faculties, and we have Joe Biden, who has never been a draw anywhere, spends most of his time hiding in the basement or on vacation. He is said to be the most popular American president in all of history, 81 million real lawful American votes. But even his supporters say that they only think of him as a slightly better alternative to Donald Trump. People support him because their reputations require it and there is no other option. And of course, Joe Biden at this point physically is just running on fumes. His brain is just sputtering out. I wanted to play another audio clip. I don't think it's going to translate with just audio. But Biden, in a campaign stop today, tells a story about his grandfather being shot down over an area where there are cannibals. That's right. The ancient Joe Biden's grandfather was shot down in a field of cannibals, and somehow he was able to escape. And here we have Joe Biden today to show for it. So we have the optics of Trump versus Biden. We have the optics of what DA Alvin Bragg and the other communist prosecutors around the nation are willing to prosecute versus what they are unwilling to prosecute. Those decisions based on politics. And we have a visual representation of the base of support for each of these men. This is mass media, viral, visual evidence that Donald Trump's actual base is the one that Democrats pretend they have. Normal, working class Americans of all backgrounds, ethnic, age, sex, economic class, and otherwise, those people support Donald Trump. Every demographic that is said to be part of the Democrat Party's base is moving to Donald Trump. Young voters, black voters, Hispanic voters, working class voters, union workers. And it's not just men, it's women too. Joe Biden basically has black women whose political leanings are the product of decade after decade of indoctrination and wannabe elites, but most particularly college-educated white women. But even those groups are leaving. The fake Trump trials are Donald Trump's real campaign, and these are some of the most successful campaign events you could possibly imagine. If Donald Trump and his people are the stupid and incompetent ones, how is it possible that he is scoring massive wins simply by driving down the street to a bodega? But let's talk about Israel and Iran. This is Fox News from last night. White House announces new sanctions on Iran following attack against Israel. The pressure will continue. White House National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan released a statement Tuesday announcing that new sanctions will be placed against Iran in the wake of the regime's attacks against Israel last weekend. The new sanctions come amid Republican criticism of the Biden administration for purportedly not being tough enough on Iran after the White House extended a waiver that allowed Iran to access $10 billion of previously escrowed funds in November 2023. In a press release, Sullivan announced that President Biden is, quote, coordinating with allies and partners, including the G7, and with bipartisan leaders in Congress on a comprehensive response. He says in the coming days, the United States will impose new sanctions targeting Iran, including its missile and drone program, as well as new sanctions against entities supporting the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps and Iran's defense ministry, the statement read. Oh, wow, is the illegitimate Biden administration going to sanction itself? In addition, we continue to work through the Department of Defense and the U.S. Central Command to further strengthen and expand the successful integration of air and missile defense and early warning systems across the Middle East to further erode the effectiveness of Iran's missile and UAV capabilities. Oh, well, that sounds great. Let's send billions and billions and billions of dollars over there to respond to something that already happened. This is like when we were told that story about the shoe bomber, and now we still have to take off our shoes to get through airport security. Sullivan said that the actions the U.S. is taking will, quote, continue a steady drumbeat of pressure to contain and degrade Iran's military capacity and effectiveness and confront the full range of its problematic behaviors. Over the last 3 years, in addition to missile and drone-related sanctions, the United States has sanctioned over 600 individuals and entities connected to terrorism, terrorist financing, and other forms of illicit trade, horrific human rights abuses, and support for proxy terrorist groups, including Hamas, Hezbollah, the Houthis, and Kataib Hezbollah, the statement said. The pressure will continue. We will not hesitate to continue to take action in coordination with allies and partners around the world and with Congress to hold the Iranian government accountable for its malicious and destabilizing actions. The Biden administration has been heavily criticized by Republicans over its treatment of Iran in the past 3 years. In addition to the November 2023 waiver extension, the White House also unlocked $6 billion in sanctions relief for Iran as part of a prisoner swap deal in September 2023, mere weeks before the October 7th attacks. The article notes, in October, White House National Security Communications Advisor John Kirby told Fox News that the Iranian regime has no access to any of the unfrozen funds. It's not that we're not enforcing sanctions. We have been enforcing them. As a matter of fact, we've added sanctions. We've sanctioned 400 entities in Iran just in the beginning of this administration, let alone the sanctions that came before us, Kirby explained. He went on, as for the fungibility, again, that money was never going to be tapped by the Iranian regime. They were never going to see it themselves. It was always going to go to vendors that we approved to go buy humanitarian assistance and medical and food directly to the Iranian people. The regime was never going to see that or feel that, and they haven't asked for it. And as usual, the problem here is that Iran is not one thing. Iran is at least two things, and the conflation of everything into one thing that we just refer to by the name of the nation is what continually allows the regime to skate on all this stuff. But think about it like this. Let's say, for instance, that there were some globalist philanthropists like George Soros or Bill Gates or any one of the number of massive family foundations or philanthropies that fund all the various aspects of the evil twin faction in the United States, all the associated NGOs, everything else. Globalist entities pushing money in to the United States while, let's say, Donald Trump is president. And they tell their supporters, don't worry, we're not pushing this money into the United States regime. It's actually just going to vendors that we know who are on our side. It's going to go directly to the people. What we're going to do is we're going to send money to the universities. We're going to send money to the tech companies. We're going to send money to the media organizations and the military contractors. But what we're not going to do is send money to the Donald Trump regime. That's basically the framing that John Kirby is trying to get away with here. He's saying, don't worry, we're not sending it to the bad Iranians, we're sending it to the good Iranians. The problem is that the good Iranians, in the eyes of those representing the global regime here in the evil twin faction, the American Uniparty, those are actually the bad guys. Now, as for their sanctions, of course, their sanctions don't work. We've seen their sanctions fail over and over and over again. These are the attempts at achieving dominance through financial and economic manipulation rather than going in and using military force, whether overt or covert. And let's take a quick flashback to last August. This is the New York Times on August 25th of 2023. The headline, with BRICS invite, Iran shrugs off outcast status in the West. Over the past 12 months, Iran has lurched from crisis to crisis. An uprising led by women and young people seeking an end to clerical rule reverberated across the nation. And as we discussed on Monday, that was essentially Iran's BLM movement. High food prices intensified a long downward spiral of the economy. Violent crackdowns by Iranian security forces on the voices of dissent prompted widespread outrage abroad, and the prospect of a nuclear deal with the United States appeared ever more dim. That's weird. They're kind of framing it as a nuclear deal with the U.S. being good for Iran and what the good and right people in Iran wanted. For all these reasons, the Iranian regime needed to be overthrown. And so they tried to do it following the normal color revolution playbook, and it just so happened that it didn't work. But then came a surprise announcement on Thursday that the country had been invited to join BRICS, a group of emerging economies aiming to act as a counterweight to Western dominance of the world order. Iranian officials immediately declared a victory, boasting about their country's historic achievement and talking up its potential as a trade partner and as an ideological disruptor of Western hegemony. Analysts agreed that it was a political win for the Islamic Republic after a year of turmoil in which it faced a severe crisis of legitimacy at home and abroad. Although joining BRICS is not expected to help solve Iran's formidable economic problems, the primary benefit of joining the group, experts say, would be to prove that Tehran has powerful friends. That could give it leverage in any further negotiations with the United States. Skipping down, they note that at the time, Iran was one of six nations invited to join BRICS. They write, the invitations underlined the odd quality of the grouping, which includes democracies and authoritarian states, and would have no clear political coherence except in the desire to reshape the current global financial and governing system to one that is more diverse and less subject to American politics and the power of the dollar. The inclusion of Iran on the list of invitees comes as the geopolitics of the Middle East have become increasingly complex, with some U.S. allies in the region chafing at their partnerships with Washington. Both Saudi Arabia and the UAE have been increasingly going their own way on issues like oil production, the war in Ukraine, and their relationships with Iran and Syria. Underlining the importance of the BRICS event for Iran, President Ibrahim Raisi, a hardline cleric who is increasingly unpopular at home for his inability to fix the mounting domestic crises facing his nation, traveled to personally accept the invitation in South Africa. The article discusses how, since that point, Iran has gotten closer to China and Russia. Joining BRICS has given them all of these powerful allies, and it reduces the impact of these sanctions and threats of sanctions, and therefore reduces the ability of the global regime to manipulate and control Iran from the outside. Here is the last chunk of this article. Even as Iran engages in diplomacy to raise its profile abroad, a struggle continues at home between people seeking greater freedoms and a government adamant in crushing them. Now just think about this in the good twin, evil twin inversion that these global media outlets continually push. The one-year anniversary of the death of a young woman, Mahsa Amini, in the custody of the morality police, which sparked the uprising, is approaching in mid-September, and activists say they will mark the occasion with more protests and acts of civil disobedience. The judiciary has warned that demonstrators will be severely punished, and the security forces have begun a sweeping crackdown on women's rights activists, students, dissidents, and families of people killed in the protests. Now, think of that description as applied to the Summer of Love here in the United States in 2020. Let me read it again. The judiciary has warned that demonstrators will be severely punished, and the security forces have begun a sweeping crackdown on women's rights activists, students, dissidents, and families of people killed in the protests. You might remember when Donald Trump sent federal forces to protect the federal courthouse in Portland that was being attacked by BLM Antifa domestic terrorists, media outlets like the New York Times presented it the exact same way. These were Donald Trump's stormtroopers just there to put down dissent and the rights of peaceful protesters. And it's funny because people are inclined to believe the New York Times in this sort of description when they are talking about Iran, which we have been told for our entire lives is a brutal regime, no matter who's in control. Most of the people calling for Israel to glass the desert in Iran could not tell you who the president is or who the president was or what kind of government they have or anything about the country whatsoever. And that, by the way, in itself is just fine. No one is required to know about Iranian politics. Unless, of course, you happen to be calling for everyone there to be put to death because you're angry about videos you saw online. Then it's probably worth inquiring whether or not the person demanding the death of thousands or hundreds of thousands or potentially even millions of people knows what they're talking about. But let's close out this New York Times article. Many Iranians and activists view the recent efforts by some countries to woo Iran as a blow to their aspirations for democratic change. Gisu Nia, a rights lawyer affiliated with the Atlantic Council in Washington, who has worked extensively on Iran, said that the timing of the diplomatic overtures to Iran, and particularly BRICS membership, would, quote, undoubtedly extend the regime's lifeline through economic support. The ultimate losers in all this are the Iranian people, who feel unrepresented and unsupported by their unelected head of state and unaccountable government, Ms. Nia said. So Iran's government is illegitimate. It's oppressing its people. The people want to change. It's the people of Iran, in fact, that want the Western sanctions to crush the Iranian economy. That's how bad they need regime change in Iran. The Atlantic Council is trying to provide the justification for the Iranian regime to be overthrown, and we are supposed to agree with the Atlantic Council. In fact, the neocons, with little R's next to their name, are the people most adamantly agreeing with the Atlantic Council here. The Atlantic Council is an elite global regime think tank, and we are being told that we are unpatriotic to not support what they support. But hey, good luck with the sanctions, guys. I'm sure that's going to accomplish quite a lot. Now let's update another story we discussed last week. This is from Fox News yesterday. Stop appeasing dictators. GOP senators demand Biden impose oil sanctions on Venezuela. But before we get into that, let's flash back again. This is October 18th, 2023 in Politico. Biden eases sanctions on Venezuelan oil and Republicans howl. The Biden administration said Wednesday it will ease sanctions against companies that trade in oil produced in Venezuela or invest in the South American country's oil industry in response to its new agreement to allow free elections next year. So that's this year. We talked a bit about the Venezuelan elections coming up. It is the position of the global regime and the illegitimate Biden administration that the elections aren't free and fair enough because the chosen puppets of the global regime are not being allowed to run in that election. The move reverses years of U.S. policy aimed at unseating President Nicolas Maduro. And even before the administration announced it late Wednesday, Republicans were accusing Biden of once again coddling unfriendly oil-producing countries. While the move could help increase the flow of Venezuelan oil into the global crude market, it is not expected to do much to bring down prices that have remained stubbornly high amid turmoil in Europe and the Middle East. The article goes on to quote various uniparty right senators like Lisa Murkowski, who called it beyond absurd. Senator John Barrasso of Wyoming, who said, with Israel under attack, Biden is desperate for anything to mask the consequences of his reckless policies. All of this being presented as a means by which the Biden administration might bring down gas prices. And the uniparty right senator from North Dakota, Kevin Cramer, who said the idea of importing oil from our adversaries is a complete slap in the face of working Americans. We should be using and supporting American energy, and any reliance on our adversaries for something as critical as energy is an obvious threat to our national security. So the fake president, Joe Biden, was working against the needs of the uniparty in Washington because he had no other choice. That's probably due to the fact that he is illegitimate and not a real president. But I know, that cannot be true. That is just a conspiracy theory, and it's irresponsible for people like me to talk about it. So let's move to this Fox News article. GOP senators demand Biden impose oil sanctions on Venezuela. A group of top Senate Republican leaders is urging President Biden to block oil sanctions relief for the Venezuelan government, an authoritarian regime which continues to oppress its opponents. The seven lawmakers, led by Senator Dan Sullivan of Alaska, sent a letter to the president Friday calling on him to cancel the so-called General License 44, which is set to come up for renewal later this week. They argued that Venezuela's government has failed to meet key requirements related to ensuring fair elections that it agreed to when the Biden administration issued the six-month license last year. Quoting from the letter, "History has proven time and time again that appeasing dictators does not work. We strongly urge you to reinstate and fully enforce all U.S. sanctions on the Maduro regime. We must not cede American leverage by lifting U.S. sanctions while the Maduro government deliberately disregards its obligations. If the U.S. fails to take a credible stance on ensuring free and fair elections are held in Venezuela, the prospects of a democratic Venezuela will continue to diminish, which will further embolden authoritarian aggressors such as the People's Republic of China, Iran, and Russia." So once again, sovereign nations, members of the BRICS currency alliance, they are the real threat, not the global regime, not the uniparty faction in the United States that is speaking through these senators. No, the real threats are Russia, Iran, and China. And of course, now Venezuela, which is why we need to impose sanctions that no one's going to follow and will never work. In October, Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro signed an agreement with the nation's opposition leaders, agreeing to freer elections as part of a deal in which the U.S. Treasury Department eased sanctions on the South American country's key oil sector. However, the Maduro regime almost immediately began taking actions in apparent violation of the deal, cracking down on the opposition and imprisoning political opponents ahead of Venezuela's upcoming presidential election slated for July 2024. The State Department said in October it would not renew the General License 44 absent progress by the Venezuelan government. The October agreement broadly authorized oil and gas transactions with Venezuela and came a year after the Biden administration granted a separate license for California-based energy firm Chevron to continue drilling in Venezuela. According to federal data, U.S. oil imports from Venezuela have spiked from 0 barrels in December 2022 to nearly 5 million barrels in January. So the Republicans are pressing Biden to reimpose these sanctions, but Reuters on Monday wrote that the U.S. will not renew a temporary license that widely eased sanctions on Venezuela's oil and gas sector unless progress is made by President Nicolas Maduro on commitments for free and fair elections this year, according to a State Department spokesman. So the license is set to expire tomorrow on the 18th. The fake Biden administration says they are not going to renew it unless Maduro has freer and more fair elections, which is a big priority for the illegitimate Biden administration. The Reuters article notes that the Biden administration is determined to punish Maduro's government in some way and is deliberating on how far to go in withdrawing sanctions relief, though it is expected to stop short of a full return to the Trump-era maximum pressure policy. And skipping down a bit, this is kind of amazing. Possible steps under serious consideration would be to allow Venezuela to continue to sell its crude on world markets, but to reimpose a ban on the use of U.S. dollars in such transactions, requiring Venezuela to switch to other currencies and expand barter arrangements and swaps, according to people briefed on the discussions. That option could expand the Venezuelan banking sector's role in oil sales if transactions in domestic currency are the only ones authorized. But will those be the only ones authorized? Well, just a few months ago, Venezuela was announced as one of 14 countries invited to join the BRICS coalition. This is a quote from Nicolas Maduro included in this Reuters article. "We are going ahead with a license or without a license. We aren't a gringo colony." And that really says it all right there. And that defiant attitude is very much in line with Maduro's comments that we went through last week. World leaders who are moving in the direction of the BRICS coalition and away from the global regime and the control of the regime's fiat bankers are no longer even giving lip service to the authority of the global regime and its enforcement arm, whether it's United States and Western military, or anything to do with economic pressures and sanctions. As we discussed on Monday, Russia-Ukraine, Israel versus paragliding go-karts, Israel versus Iran, China versus Taiwan, the slave trade at our southern border, all of these things are showing that the global regime no longer has the ability to enforce the policies it promotes. Neither the threat of sanctions nor the threat of military force are functioning to actually compel compliance in certain behaviors by leaders around the world. The people most under the spell of this illusory power are the men and women of these Western nations who are still in the mindset of believing that our corrupt, illegitimate, and incompetent leaders are still fully in control. And why is that? Why don't these foreign leaders respect the ability of Joe Biden and the American Uniparty to command their behavior? Well, this might have something to do with it. This is the New York Times yesterday. Trump holds series of meetings with foreign leaders. Hey, Donald Trump's not president. What is he doing meeting all of these leaders? The New York Times is about to tell us that all of it is completely and totally normal. Donald J. Trump plans to meet with the right-wing president of Poland this week, the latest in a series of his private interactions with leaders or emissaries from countries from the Persian Gulf to Eastern Europe, many of whom share an affinity with his brand of politics. Oh yeah, it's all those authoritarians and autocrats coming to visit Donald Trump. It's all of those people who don't care about our democracy. Mr. Trump is expected to have dinner in New York with Poland's president Andrzej Duda on Wednesday, his one day off from court this week, according to two people briefed on the arrangements who were not authorized to discuss them publicly. The meeting was mentioned as a possibility by Mr. Duda on X shortly after the New York Times approached his office for comment. It will be a reunion for Mr. Trump and Mr. Duda, who once proposed naming a military base after Mr. Trump and who now shares power in Poland with a rival whose politics are much more aligned with those of President Biden. Yes, the global regime and their propaganda media have been promoting the Polish Prime Minister Donald Tusk as the true leader of Poland. He was the president of the European Council from 2014 to 2019, and from 2019 to 2022 was the president of the European People's Party. So when they say that his politics are more in line with Joe Biden, what they mean is that he is a functionary of the global regime in Poland. And while he's not president, if the media continues to describe him as a leader who shares power with Duda, they can eventually push the idea that he is the true and legitimate leader of Poland. It's easy to spot this narrative pattern now. That is what they did with, for instance, Alexei Navalny, acting like he provides some legitimate opposition to Vladimir Putin, like he would have been elected if not for Putin jailing him. The reality is that he is just a total invention of the global regime and its intelligence agencies. But back to the New York Times. Mr. Trump's other recent interactions with foreign leaders and their representatives include a phone call he had last month with King Hamad bin Isa Al Khalifa of Bahrain, which was previously undisclosed. A senior Bahraini official described it as, quote unquote, a social call. The quickening tempo of this foreign outreach is in one sense unsurprising. Foreign leaders read the polls and understand that Mr. Trump could return to power. Richard Haass, a former diplomat and the president emeritus of the Council on Foreign Relations, said there was nothing inherently wrong with such interactions. There's nothing unusual, or to put it positively, there's everything usual about foreign leaders meeting with the American equivalent of the leader of the opposition, Mr. Haass said. Mr. Trump would cross a red line, however, with any attempt to influence the words or actions of foreign leaders. For instance, by asking for expressions of support or that they take steps to undermine Mr. Biden's policies, he said. Then he is carrying out foreign policies, Mr. Haass said, adding, "This is all fine in principle. It just depends on the actual content in practice." And it actually sounds like Richard Haass is making an argument for why all of the shadow diplomacy that has been done, for instance, while Donald Trump was president, by associates and allies of Richard Haass himself, all of that was fine. All of that was okay. It's only a problem for unauthorized Americans to conduct foreign policy if they say the wrong things or ask foreign leaders to say certain things or express support. You got it? They're just very specific cases. But also, they tried to pursue Michael Flynn under the Logan Act for talking to his counterparts in Russia during the transition after Donald Trump had already been elected president. And I've been mentioning this pretty regularly over the last couple of months as we get a report every week, it seems at this point, of Donald Trump meeting with a foreign leader who wants nothing to do with the illegitimate President Joe Biden. People like Richard Haass have largely been trying to ignore all of this because they don't want Donald Trump portrayed as a current world leader. But eventually it's got to be addressed. So they're attempting to normalize it and reframe things in a way that it won't blow back on them. Back to the article. The meetings nevertheless carry political sensitivities. Many foreign embassies are conducting their outreach quietly through emissaries to avoid angering the Biden administration. Oh yes, that's it. And what poor cover the New York Times is providing for the Biden administration. These other foreign leaders do all this stuff quietly so that the Biden administration doesn't find out. Now, that might make it seem like these other nations are less deferential to Donald Trump than they are, but it also kind of reveals that the Biden administration is left out of the loop and they're unable to figure these things out on their own. And countries that have connected directly with Mr. Trump through their heads of state tend to be governments whose leaders have quarreled with Mr. Biden or who had a relationship with Mr. Trump as president. In late March, for example, Mr. Trump spoke by phone with the Saudi crown prince, Mohammed bin Salman. The call was arranged by Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, who was visiting with Prince Mohammed at the time, two people familiar with the call said. What in the world is Lindsey Graham doing over there? It seems like there are things we don't know about Lindsey Graham. What a curious little fellow he is. As president, Mr. Trump had a warm relationship with Prince Mohammed and deflected outrage over the 2018 murder of the Saudi dissident Jamal Khashoggi in an operation U.S. intelligence officials assessed was conducted on the Crown Prince's orders. Mr. Biden, by contrast, has condemned Prince Mohammed for the killing, although they have since established a working relationship. So again, the New York Times repeats the official story within the central narrative. Mohammed bin Salman was responsible for the detaining and eventual dismemberment of Jamal Khashoggi, who we're told was just a writer for the Washington Post and definitely, never, ever an intelligence asset. He was also definitely killed by Mohammed bin Salman and not any proxies of the global regime. We can trust the intelligence community's assessment on that. It's all true, and they definitely weren't trying to destroy the reputation of Mohammed bin Salman as he assumed power, rather than an ally of the global regime. Back to the New York Times. Earlier in March, Mr. Trump hosted Prime Minister Viktor Orban of Hungary at Mar-a-Lago, his private club in Florida. Mr. Orban is a right-wing nationalist who has been at odds with Mr. Biden and other European leaders over the war in Ukraine and his efforts to crack down on the Hungarian press and judiciary. Mr. Orban has often appeared, as Mr. Trump has, to be sympathetic to the goals of President Vladimir V. Putin of Russia and has endorsed Mr. Trump's campaign for president. He did not meet with Mr. Biden during his U.S. visit. Now, is that a problem for Richard Haass? Did Donald Trump ask Viktor Orban to support him, or did Viktor Orban just support him on his own? Why aren't Richard Haass and the fake president calling for an investigation? We should get to the bottom of this. Why is Donald Trump acting as though he's president when he absolutely is not president, and the man who received 81 million real lawful American votes is definitely president and always has been? The dinner with Mr. Duda on Wednesday also fits a similar pattern. Mr. Duda represents Poland's powerful conservative nationalist party, which dominated the country for years until recently, and, in ways similar to Mr. Orban, clamped down on the press and judiciary and feuded with the European Union. He's just a bad, bad boy. Since national elections in 2023, Mr. Duda has shared power with a bitter political rival, Prime Minister Donald Tusk, a former senior EU official who casts himself in opposition to Mr. Duda and Mr. Duda's Law and Justice Party as a defender of democracy. In March of last year, Mr. Duda and Mr. Tusk set aside their differences and paid a joint visit to Mr. Biden at the White House to show a united front against Russia's war in Ukraine. Unlike Mr. Orban, Mr. Duda is an unwavering critic of Russia's invasion. But Mr. Duda will be rekindling close ties with Mr. Trump, who hosted the Polish president at the White House in June 2020, just 4 days before Mr. Duda faced a closely contested re-election vote. Some analysts said the meeting amounted to an improper endorsement of Mr. Duda, who during the visit proposed naming a planned U.S. military base in Poland Fort Trump. Brian Hughes, a senior advisor to the Trump campaign, said the meetings and calls from world leaders, quote, reflect the recognition of what we already know here at home. When President Trump is sworn in as the 47th president of the United States, the world will be more secure and America will be prosperous. And I think it really is becoming pretty clear to virtually everybody that Donald Trump has already won. And of course he has already won. He won in 2020. Richard Fontaine, a former foreign policy advisor to Senator John McCain, all no name, agreed that Mr. Trump's meetings were not extraordinary, but he said it was unusual for a foreign leader to overtly side with the chief opponent of the U.S. president. Yeah, that's strange. What's unusual here is the heads of state generally remain studiously neutral in their outreach, Mr. Fontaine said. In the case of Orban, at least, he has publicly thrown in with Trump. Yeah, it's weird, isn't it, that these foreign leaders would overtly side with the opponent of the legitimate and real U.S. president? Why would they be doing something so strange? Why aren't they worried that they might anger Joe Biden? Don't they need Joe Biden as an ally? I mean, he is the most powerful man in the world and was, when he was elected, the most popular president of all time. 81 million real lawful American votes. I mean, that is what the TV told us, and for certain, Leaders around the world know that the American media would never lie to the American people, not about an American election. I bet all those foreign leaders even ignored their own intelligence agencies who told them, yeah, there's no way that Joe Biden received 81 million real lawful American votes. No one of any sophistication or even just a mild hum in the brain could possibly think that Joe Biden received 81 million real lawful American votes. Very serious intellectuals in America think that's true, but world leaders know that's not true because there's no way that it could have happened. And it doesn't matter how many times people on American television say, Donald Trump lost 62 court cases. And even Bill Barr said there wasn't evidence of widespread fraud. And Chris Krebs said it was the safest and most secure election of all time. You dumb maggots. Yeah, foreign leaders probably don't take talk like that all that seriously, but apparently people online still find that very convincing, and Trump supporters, for whatever reason, are still triggered by it. Make fun of people who think that. That's the point. It is retarded. You're supposed to mock them. You're not supposed to take them seriously and handle them with kid gloves. And if it's someone close to you and you feel like you might be mean, just laugh at them and say, you don't really believe that, do you? And if they want to argue about it, just be like, come on. I'm not arguing about something so ridiculous. Nobody believes that Joe Biden received 81 million real lawful American votes. And if you do, then, you know, we just shouldn't talk about this subject. And then leave it alone. Don't engage them. Don't try to prove them wrong. It's been 4 years and these people still have not considered that they might be wrong about a whole series of subjects they know they don't know anything about. You taking them seriously and treating them as though they do know what they're talking about allows them to continue living with the illusion that they do know what they're talking about, because they have already classified you as ignorant and clueless. When you try to prove them wrong and they believe that what you're saying has already been debunked, you are actually proving to them that you are still wrong. If it was gonna work, it would have worked already. They're going to have to figure it out on their own. And unfortunately, most people don't get there without having to endure some jarring and painful experience. And we don't wish that on them, but the other methods have been tried. And at some point, there is no avoiding the consequences of this sort of ignorance. Back to the New York Times. Nothing obliges Mr. Trump to coordinate his meetings with the U.S. State Department. Spokesmen for the agency did not respond when asked whether the department has had any communication with Mr. Trump's team. Other foreign outreach to Mr. Trump is less about defying Mr. Biden and more about building a personal relationship to put the country in a more favorable position should Mr. Trump retake the presidency. So all of these foreign leaders who don't talk to Joe Biden and don't respect Joe Biden and know Joe Biden's not a real president, they're just talking to Donald Trump to gain advantage for when he is president again. That's the New York Times saying that. President Volodymyr Zelensky of Ukraine has publicly invited Mr. Trump to visit his country to see the war for himself. A person close to Mr. Zelensky, who spoke on the condition of anonymity to discuss sensitive matters, said the Ukrainian president appreciated that the Trump administration was the first to give lethal aid to Ukraine, something the Obama administration had not done. This person said that several people close to Mr. Trump, who are ardent supporters of Ukraine, have pushed a similar message to what Mr. Zelensky has said publicly. I wonder how long the New York Times will attest to the legitimacy of the comedic actor in Ukraine since he banned opposition parties, canceled the election whose date has already passed, and his term to the extent that there was ever any legitimacy to his presidency in the first place. Expires on May 20th. So he's got about a month left before even a hint of legitimacy disappears for Volodymyr Zelensky. And what then? Mr. Trump has made various statements about Ukraine since the invasion that have offered little clarity about his thinking about the conflict. But he has raised concerns by saying that he would encourage Russian aggression against NATO members who fail to meet their financial commitments to the organization. Now, does that seem like what Donald Trump has said about Ukraine? He has said on national television in that CNN town hall hosted by Caitlin Collins that he wants the dying to stop. He wants people to stop dying. And he has said many, many times by this point that if he was president, this conflict would have never happened. And when he becomes president again, this conflict will be over within 24 hours. Why isn't the Times printing that? Instead, they are asserting that Donald Trump encouraged Russian aggression against NATO members if they fail to pay their bills, which is a blatantly false portrayal of what he did. Current and former representatives of the British government have also been in touch with Mr. Trump. Finland's ambassador to the U.S., Mikko Hautala, has reached out directly to him and sought to persuade him of his country's value to NATO as a new member, according to two people familiar with the conversations. For U.S. officials, Mr. Trump's conversation with Prince Mohammed was much more worrisome. Mr. Biden is negotiating a delicate security agreement with Saudi Arabia that could form part of a grander deal, one in which Riyadh establishes formal diplomatic relations with Israel for the first time, because such a deal could include new steps toward a Palestinian state. Biden officials see it as a critical exit ramp from the Gaza conflict. Well, that sounds almost exactly like the Abraham Accords that Donald Trump was already leading. And we are supposed to believe that Mr. Biden, the illegitimate president, who Mohammed bin Salman greeted with a fist bump, that guy is going to get a deal done? His deal? This is a joke. But some officials fear that Mr. Trump, whose real estate company has a deal with a Saudi firm for a project in Oman, could try to persuade Prince Mohammed to wait until after the November election, thus giving Mr. Trump an opportunity to preside over the deal as president. Ah, yes, there it is. Donald Trump is going to influence world affairs and manipulate them in such a way as to undermine the deal that the very real president, Joe Biden, is making in order to manipulate the outcome of the very real election that's happening in November. And what do you think the New York Times is going to call that when that happens? Oh, they're going to call it foreign interference in an American election. They're seeding the narrative. Watch it happen. And so what do we have here? We have a series of cover stories all meant to obscure Joe Biden's legitimacy while attempting to frame Donald Trump as acting against American interests in service of his own power. As always, the same story that we've been hearing for nearly 9 years now since Donald Trump came down the escalator. We're only 2 months away from the 9-year anniversary of Donald Trump coming down that escalator. And so we have the threat of worthless sanctions against Iran. They thought the attack over the weekend was going to give them license to bomb Iran, destroy Iran, glass the desert, whatever it takes to accomplish regime change there. Because Iran is rejecting the influence of the global regime. We have the same thing in Venezuela, a full-throated rejection of the global regime, its priorities, and its influence. The sanctions aren't about the oil supply. That is a secondary concern. They're looking to weaken the Venezuelan economy in order to delegitimize Venezuela's leadership and hopefully protect their control over the regime proxy state in Guyana. And here they are trying to reframe all of Donald Trump's meetings with these foreign leaders as something that normally occurs because Donald Trump is the leader of the opposition party. There's at least some chance that he might become president. So all of these leaders around the world who don't seem to really recognize Joe Biden's legitimacy as the American president, they're going to gain an advantage with Donald Trump because everybody knows that if you cater to Donald Trump's ego, oh, he's going to like you so much. So they're all just fooling Trump. I mean, he's dumb and incompetent as always. He doesn't have any idea what he's doing in foreign affairs. He should be leaving all of that to the experts. You know, the people at the Atlantic Council and the Council on Foreign Relations, people like Richard Haass, they're the ones who really know how to conduct our foreign affairs, not stupid Donald Trump and all these world leaders who seem to think that he is, for whatever reason, the American president and not Joe Biden. And they have to lay down the premises to go after Donald Trump and delegitimize Donald Trump. They're going to say that he was conducting American foreign policy to undermine the legitimate American president, Joe Biden. And anyone who does that, well, they should probably be brought up on charges and put on trial, because only an evil man like Donald Trump would do that. That's not the sort of thing that Richard Haass and his allies in the global regime would ever do to someone like Donald Trump. I mean, they would never do it again. They did do it through his entire first term as president. I mean, Barack Obama conducted a shadow presidency throughout that entire term. And who knows what we might find out about this second term. I mean, if the TV is not telling us the truth about Joe Biden's legitimacy and about how Donald Trump totally lost and totally staged an insurrection, and that's why they tried to impeach him even though he wasn't president anymore. But people like Richard Haass and Barack Obama and their allies in the global regime, well, they would never conduct foreign policy in an attempt to undermine a duly elected American president. Except, you see, they did do that thing. And it seems like maybe that's why Richard Haass is trying to let everyone know that it's only a problem in very specific situations. Or it could be that all of this is just a cover story and there's something else going on. I'll be back tomorrow at the same reasonable time on the same reasonable podcast network. I don't have a network. Masks and lockdowns don't work. They lied to you about a pandemic. And Joe Biden will never be president.
In my mind, that's the end game.
If you're listening to this episode for free, you can support me and support the show and the work I do by signing up for a paid subscription at imyourmoderator.substack.com. You can do so for as low as $50 a year or $5 a month. Comes out to under a quarter per episode, and you'll blast right through the paywall for all of the writing. The merch store is www.cancelcouture.com, and you can find everything else by heading to Linktree. Linktree.com/I'm Your Moderator. And I'll see you soon out on the range.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices.
Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
In my mind, that's the end game.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like to follow what I'm reading and thinking throughout the day, you can do that by downloading the Telegram Messenger app and going to t.me/I'm your moderator. On social media, you can follow me on Truth Social, Getter, and Gab at I'm Your Moderator. I also have channels on Rumble and BitChute. If you'd like to follow the writing, you can find me at imyourmoderator.substack.com. The merch site is cancelcouture.com or go direct shop.spreadshirt.com/cancel-couture. If you'd like to support the podcast financially, the best place to do that is Ko-Fi. Go to ko-fi.com/I'm your moderator. And all of these details will appear in the show notes with each episode. I'll see you soon down on the range.
It's hell!